I'm here in my living room, peering through my mini blinds at a man who's sawing off something under my neighbor's car. Yep, this guy is stealing catalytic converters. And if you report thieves like him, you could get a reward up to $25,000. Just submit a confidential tip at heatreward.com or call 1-800-947-HEAT. That's H-E-A-T. The Virginia State Police HEAT Program. Reported. Rewarded.
This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Ping.fm, and UpSnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Madeira Show, where he will discuss testosterone optimization and full body health for the high-performance modern man. Now, here's your host, Dr. Madeira.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Sam Madeira here on the Dr. Madeira Show. And today we have a guest, and I'm very excited to interview Dr. Jordan Wiggins. How's it going today, Dr. Jordan?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing really well. Surviving the cloudy, dark days here in Seattle. So that's good. Getting through it all. And you're over in the Niagara region of Ontario, correct?
Yes, it's snowy but sunny here today. So not complaining.
Beautiful. Love it. Yeah, I actually grew up probably about a day's drive from there in Vermont. So not too far from where you're at. Snowy, sunny days are really, I would take those cold, sunny days over cloudy days anytime. So
same, so much better for mood.
Yes, definitely. And you have some exciting things coming up that we're going to talk about and share with the audience, just to introduce you to everybody, to make sure you, they know who you are. Is you have been revolutionizing the way that we practitioners deliver and educate and talk about sexual health, wellness, and pleasure for women and the men that love them. And specifically, you own Health Overall, the premier naturopathic wellness and IV therapy clinic in Niagara Region, Ontario. You're also an expert on hormone and mood imbalance, libido, biomarker testing, and regenerative medicine. And Dr. Wiggins is the founder of Pleasure Collective, the Pleasure Collective, a coaching community and sexual health and wellness re-education program for women. She is setting a higher standard for women's sexual health using pleasure as the way back to wellness and outstanding health, not another pill. And we actually connected through the crazy world of Instagram, which is amazing that that's connecting people and professionals now. And I was impressed with your approach to women's hormones and low libido and just this overall sexual health for women that is coming from more of basically demystifying and debunking the myths around it's normal to, as women age, and I guess we could say men too, and throw that in here today. Talk about men and women's hormone health today in libido. To normalize that it's okay for them to have low libido as they age or at any age, that that's just not normal. And I really, that caught my attention. Maybe we can kind of step it back a little bit actually for the audience and talk about what drew you into discussing this on social media and then your personal journey with your patients and finding what has helped them the best.
For sure. So I definitely did not set out to be treating women's sexual health and wellness. Sometimes the DMs I get on Instagram are quite interesting just due to the nature of what I talk about. But I graduated naturopathic medical school and learned so much about hormone optimization and digestive optimization and really thinking that I could treat libido and sexual health issues by balancing hormones. And I learned quite quickly in my practice that while that was a piece of it, it was definitely not a whole part of the picture. And people were improving maybe 20 to 30% by hormone balance, but I needed to dig deeper and have these conversations and talk to people that were the outliers. So my 50, 60, 70 year old patients with great libido and see what were they doing differently. But I definitely noticed there was a correlation between patients with really great libido having better overall health than those with lower libido. So I sort of set out on that journey 5 years ago.
Fantastic. Yeah, it definitely seems like oftentimes people are coming to us maybe when they say, oh, this doctor's a hormone specialist. I just need to get X, Y, and Z hormones compounded from a compounding pharmacy and start using those creams or taking those capsules and using those medications, and then everything will be fine. Whereas, as you're saying, there's more to it. What are some of the main root causes that you found with women and men, I guess, for low libido and lack of interest in sex?
So definitely the sexual health education that we lack in a way. Especially this affects women because we're sort of taught the male model of arousal as default. And for many women, they begin sexually neutral and they need to be in a context that is overtly arousing for them to then have desire. And it doesn't work the same way for men. So women that do not have spontaneous desire are feeling like there's something wrong with them. And just by feeling like there's something wrong with you, that is going to put the brakes on wanting to be intimate. So from the very root, our sexual health education is a big, big barrier for women, but also the men that love them, because we expect it to work like a Hollywood movie where you've worked an 8-10 hour day, made dinner, and you know, all of a sudden you get that catch eye contact and you're ready to have this passionate sex and orgasm at the same time like you see on TV. But that's really just not the way it's working in real life. And when our expectations don't meet reality, then that's where we start to see a breakdown in relationship. So I think root cause is we need a sexual health re-education and sort of examine the beliefs that people have about sex and how they are sexual with each other.
Yeah, it does sound like everybody has kind of been misled in that regard. And I mean, that's even good for, I think, the listeners to hear, both men and women, that, because what I hear a lot of the time is like, oh, well, the sex just isn't good, where that's kind of like a blanket statement, but also a judgment on themselves. Like, either we're not good at this anymore, like it's a sport or something, you know, or it used to be good, now it's not good anymore. Or I used to have a libido, but I don't have a libido because I'm not 20 years old anymore. And all these kind of like, justifications and normalizing statements, but also a lot of kind of condemning judgment either on themselves or their significant other, husband or wife or boyfriend, girlfriend, that we are trying to do this thing that used to be great. And that's one of the reasons why they were together. And then, or are together, and then they are really kind of mystified and confused why we don't have this chemistry anymore. And a lot of the times, as we know, it can be low hormones. Maybe we can discuss how hormones play into sexual health, libido, arousal, and what hormones that maybe some people haven't really heard of or aren't talked about a lot that play into this.
For sure. And I'll give you a Cole's Notes on this one because I want to really give your listeners a chance to talk about what people aren't talking about. And I think sometimes the hormone stuff is addressed, but in a nutshell, I will ask my patients, can you get an erection? Can you orgasm? Is there pain with sex? And if those are issues, then hormones are probably a fundamental problem. Mm-hmm. And I do blood work in all of my patients, full hormone panel right away, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, sex hormone, binding globulin, just mm-hmm. to see. But what I really noticed, especially with women, is I could have a female patient with low testosterone and great libido, and high testosterone or high normal testosterone and low libido. And that's actually research proven that testosterone isn't always the issue with women. It's a desire issue or a lack of desire issue. So always using blood work as a starting point, but I really do think for the majority of people, it's going deeper into the belief systems, into the education, into the way they're communicating or not communicating with their partners.
And how can couples start to rewire this communication or kind of step back and reapproach something that maybe was a source of contention or disappointment in the past, where one partner is saying, well, you know, I'm interested in sex. I would prefer to have sex daily or at least twice a week. And meanwhile, the other partner is just saying, you know what, usually what I hear is I'm tired.
Tired,
I don't
headache.
Ever see you. Like there's no touch. First, you know, like one partner can't go 0 to 60. Usually it's the male that can go 0 to 60 to, from, you know, sitting on the couch to having passionate sex, where, as you were saying, females, their arousal system is different. So how can they start to ask questions or at least approach this conversation in a productive, solution-oriented way?
So I love starting with the 5 love language quiz. So you can Google that, just 5 love languages quiz, and it should come up. It's free. First of all, we express love and affection in a way that we want to receive it. So stereotypically speaking, most men are providers, and they will show their affection by providing for their partner. And they're confused when that's not received as love or caring. Because so your wife might actually really like it if you folded the laundry or unloaded the dishwasher and didn't, you know, provide a cleaning lady to do so, but you actually did so yourself. But the point being, so if you have this set of love languages and your partner has a different set, you're constantly miscommunicating. So you think you're showing and expressing love, but it's not being received that way. So a really great way to start the conversation that's kind of lighthearted and can move things forward is by both you and your partner doing the love language quiz and sort of reading about that, seeing what your love language is. So if for your wife, her love language is acts of service, you vacuuming so she doesn't have to do it and she can go have a bath, that is advancing the plot when it comes to intimacy. So that's one way. And another way, this is huge for the women that I work with and their partners, is inherently men are more fixers and they're more linear in their thinking. And women are much more like communicators, feelers. Like the men want to get from, you know, point A to point B, and women want to know like what the scenic route is and how you felt along the way. Evolutionary sort of, again, a generalization, but most women do not feel heard and understood by their partner. So again, you've both worked a really long day, taken kids to practice, you know, doing all the things that we need to do, and you finally sit down to chat, and the woman starts telling about her feelings, and the response is how to fix it. But she wants her feelings to be heard. So she ends up sort of shutting down over time. And that's a huge, huge one. So I'm always telling my male patients that their first response when they're communicating with their partner is to say, "So what I'm hearing is," and just reflect back to her what you just heard her say. Mm-hmm. Don't try and fix it. Don't try and, you know, save the day, because we just want to be heard. And when we feel like you're trying to fix us, or, you know, maybe minimize what we're saying. So a lot of times we'll hear, you know, "Well, I didn't we already talk about this?" My husband, bless him. But sometimes if I'm not fully over something and I bring it up again, it means I just want to be heard about it. And he'll say, "Well, I thought we already talked about this and you're going to do this solution that he recommended. But for me, I just want to be heard." And by truly hearing someone, that also opens the door to more and more communication. And even if there's charge or emotion around it, just by speaking it and sort of letting it out, that takes women from their, you know, sympathetic overdrive, overthinking, into that more parasympathetic state where she feels safe and understood. And that's where the arousal comes from. So ask her, or just repeat, "So what I'm hearing is," and just repeat it. And that is one of the best communication tools that I don't think we utilize as couples today.
So less fixing, more listening, and then leave the fixing to repairing the house.
Yeah, don't fix her. She's not broken.
Yeah, she's
just
not broken.
Just listen to her wonderful wave of emotion. And then when she feels like she can truly be herself, that's where the arousal will come from.
Okay. And you said something that I'd like to highlight for the listeners, because they may have missed it, is you said something about security and safety. And I think definitely for women, and you were mentioning more for women feeling heard and safe and secure. And for men too, I think feeling secure and having a sense of safety, but also within that, like, pride and accomplishment, and that they're respected or revered by their partner. And then I think women have this too, but maybe it's a different programming, if you will, than in conditioning than men. But when I think both couples are mirroring that to each other, then the arousal can be more potentially spontaneous or less inhibited than when obviously the female's not feeling safe or secure, then they're not going to want to let their guard down and be heard. So that was something that you said that I thought was very on point. And then oftentimes going back to hormones, we're talking a lot about like quote unquote adrenal fatigue or HPA axis dysregulation or HPO ovarian axis dysregulation or HPT, you know, testosterone, et cetera. And what I think a lot of us have kind of forgotten or potentially missed within that is that we're, you know, hypothetically running from the bear every day, you know, like every 15 minutes, every half an hour. And we didn't evolve to have that kind of chronic stress response every hour or what have you every day. And what we had was a sense of safety most of the time, unless our tribe was in like a war or a famine. But a lot of the times we, even within like a famine, there was a certain amount of, okay, well, we're safe. Like we're not being attacked by something. So today, oftentimes what I see with patients is men and women is that they don't really register it, but they're being either attacked by their boss or their significant other. And there's this kind of lack of safety or security. And I don't mean in just the psychological stance, but definitely that's the big part. But it's registered as kind of like a micro trauma every time it happens. And it adds insult to injury where, you know, somebody may come in with some dysregulation in hormones, but it actually has to do with their job and or significant other. And this is compounding the issue where you're saying in the beginning, I really liked how you said it's not always a hormonal issue. And with women, you were saying how testosterone can actually be high and they can have low libido. So that doesn't really make sense from like a textbook hormone point of view. What other aspects of looking at the causes of low libido are you finding to be helpful? And is there a strong link between low libido and mental health?
So definitely agree that the fight or flight response, the sympathetic overdrive, the adrenal fatigue, I find that much more correlated to libido and desire than hormones in most people, unless they're having, you know, pain with sex or not getting erections. So the safety is so key, having time to unwind, having time, especially for women, and this is the women that I work with. So, it might be different for you, but I find men seem to be a little bit better at carving out time for themselves to do things that they like, whether it's, you know.
I'm here in my living room peering through my mini blinds at a man who's sawing off something under my neighbor's car. Yep, this guy is stealing catalytic converters. And if you report thieves like him, you could get a reward up to $25,000. Just submit a confidential tip at heatreward.com or call 1-800-947-HEAT. That's H-E-A-T. The Virginia State Police HEAT Program. Reported. Rewarded.
Michael J. for Hope for the Warriors. Started back in 06 at Camp Lejeune, military families witnessing the effects of war on their loved ones. Now, almost 20 years later, they've aided over 53,000 service members, veterans, and families with confidential, high-quality behavioral health care services at little or no cost. To post 9/11 vets and their families, over 91% of every dollar donated goes directly to the programs. If you're as concerned about our heroes as I am, go to hopeforthewarriors.org.
Playing sports with their friends or just doing things where they're a part of a community, they have physical activity, they're sort of chatting and they're unwinding. Where women are doing everything on their to-do list, doing things for everyone else, and they're not ever doing things that they desire. And that seems to really reverse the those micro traumas that we're going through every day. So I will always ask my patients, what do you do for yourself every day? And more times than not, I met with a blank stare or tears because they're not doing anything for themselves. So I get them to do a desire list every day and ask themselves, like write it in a journal and say, what do you desire now in this moment? Is it a hug? Is it a chocolate bar? Is it to be curled up on the couch with a book? What do you desire in 1 month and what do you desire in 1 year? And just to sort of reprogram those neural pathways to be thinking about what could make me happy, what could, you know, relax me in this moment, because we're just running from task to task, putting out fire after fire all day long, plugged in all the time. So definitely reversing that adrenal, like the burnout or the alarm phase that we're in, is really, really key to feeling safe and being able to often reverse mental health issues. So anhedonia is the lack of pleasure, lack of joy. Activities that used to make you happy don't make you happy anymore. And it's one of the criteria for diagnosis for major depressive disorder. So that's where I see the link between mental health and low libido quite clearly. But even if people don't meet all the diagnostic criteria for depression, I would say that 95% of my patients are anhedonic. I don't know if you notice the same thing, but they're just really lacking that joy, that spark, that being alive feeling.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely see that quite a bit. And it's like this burnout that nobody is kind of acknowledging, and it's chronic and ubiquitous. Like you're saying, men, women, whether they have kids or not. I definitely see what you're saying with women. I guess the archetype that I see it most commonly with are mothers who are either running their own business, and they may be a single mom or not, or they work in a company and the demands of work are enough to make most people just completely exhausted. So they have the job being a mother, which is a full-time job, their work job, which is, you know, 80 hours a week or whatever, plus travel. So the time zones are going to mess up the hormones and all that. And then all the blue light with having to be, you know, responding to everything on their phone, everything from their social life to their kids to their work life, that kind of messing things up. So it plays into, you know, what people call like depression, anxiety, and, you know, lack of libido, and just, and then it's kind of like, well, where do you fit in even a conversation with their husband, you know, or wife or significant other? Where do they even fit that in the row of, you know, priorities? It's like, okay, well, maybe once a month they're having sex, you know? And I think you did, I think it was last month or earlier this month, you did a survey of everybody on following you on Instagram of how commonly people were having sex. And what did you find? What was the most shocking things you found?
So research proven, 20% of people are in a sexless marriage, and that means having sex 10 times a year or less, which really is like once a month, or, you know, you went a little longer than that a couple times. And so sexless marriages are on the rise. Also in 2000, I can't remember who did this study, but between 2000 and 2012, people are having two less sexual encounters per month. And my patients will say to me, I would rather scroll my Instagram than be intimate with my partner, or, you know, fold the laundry, make an excuse, they're too tired, they have a headache. So the number of sexual...
Why would they rather have... Sorry to interrupt. That's just shocking to me. Something's wrong with this. Something's really wrong with
this. It is.
Instagram didn't even exist a while back, so we're not that far into Instagram. Why is, you know, Instagram so exciting and their partner...
It's the dopamine. It's the dopamine hits that people are getting from scrolling their Instagram when they could be getting it from orgasm and intimacy, but it's less work to scroll your app, which is, to me, like, this is a problem. So women are two times more likely than men to be prescribed an antidepressant. And I think when you go to your doctor and say, you know, I'm not myself, my libido's low, I lack interest in things, I'm not sleeping as well as I used to, the answer is an antidepressant prescription, with, you know, a general medical practitioner and functional doctors, naturopathic doctors, hopefully are investigating a little bit deeper. But
it's very common. And then I was actually reading a research article yesterday that said it's very common for men to have sexual dysfunction after discontinuing Prozac or other SSRI antidepressant medications, and not just issues with libido, but issues with orgasm or lack of sensation and things like that. So that's concerning, that these medications are actually altering the brain chemistry for long periods of time after they stop taking the medication. And I believe it's up to 6 months or 9 months afterwards. So potentially
I see that a lot in my practice as well, that, yeah, brain chemistry is altered. And sometimes even you're going on these medications and low libido is a side effect. It just, I don't know, it doesn't make sense. When we're looking at neurotransmitters, serotonin is more like subdued, more calming. And then oxytocin, which fosters connection, and dopamine, which is that excitement, that sort of new relationship, excitement, energy. Like, why are we prescribing SSRIs and not orgasm as a solution? Because it's almost like serotonin is making it worse, and it's making it worse even after discontinuing the medication. So that's, again, I think we should be having a different, more open conversation, but only 20% of women feel comfortable bringing up these issues to their healthcare provider, which is shocking to me.
And it sounds like most women have these problems or have these concerns, and most of them aren't bringing it up.
51% of women will suffer from sexual dysfunction at some point in their life. And to me, that's not a problem. That's an epidemic that we need to be, as healthcare providers, talking about and addressing. And it's just, right now, healthcare is failing to do so, especially for women, but also for men.
And with sex, I think maybe what I'm thinking about right now is, as I hear all these things, is the skeptic. It might be hearing this and thinking, well, why does this matter? Why? And obviously I'm playing devil's advocate right now. Why does this matter? Why does sex matter so much for health? And what's the big deal having sex 12 times a year, or 10 times a year? You know, they're still having sex, and aren't there other things that are bigger concern than sex or whatever? That aside, you know, what are the I guess, sexual health benefits when people are actually active in sex and actively having orgasms, and that we actually know that science has shown. You know, one thing that I've heard quite a bit and read is that oxytocin is released from our heart after an orgasm, so that fosters more connection. And then heart disease is the leading cause of death in pretty much all developed countries in the world. So that's a benefit. Also immune health, mood health. So we've been talking about mental health. What are some other ones that I'm missing that are big ones?
So this is definitely an area that we need more research for sure. But improving immune function, like you said, release of oxytocin and nitric oxide, which do help cardiovascular health. We get a bunch of pain relief hormones from not only...
I'm here in my living room peering through my mini blinds at a man who's sawing off something under my neighbor's car. Yep, this guy is stealing catalytic converters. And if you report thieves like him, you could get a reward up to $25,000. Just submit a confidential tip at heatreward.com or call 1-800-947-HEAT. That's H-E-A-T. The Virginia State Police HEAT Program. Reported. Rewarded.
Michael J. for Hope for the Warriors. Started back in 06 at Camp Lejeune. Military families witnessing the effects of war on their loved ones. Now, almost 20 years later, they've aided over 53,000 service members, veterans, and families with confidential, high-quality behavioral health care services at little or no cost to post 9/11 vets and their families. Over 91% of every dollar donated goes directly to the programs. If you're as concerned about our heroes as I am, go to hopeforthewarriors.org.
IMAX, but just being aroused in general. They did an interesting study in endometriosis with arousal and orgasm, and sex could actually be used to help as part of a treatment for those patients with endometriosis. But yeah, pain relief, increase in immune function, and way, way better neurotransmitter profiles. So mood boosting benefits. Also, just the patients that I talk to, they can talk about a time in their life when their relationship was new and their libido was high and everything was great and, you know, colors seemed brighter and just more energy, more enthusiasm. And then as libido goes away, so does that drive and so not that that has been researched, but if there was a way that we could research that. And I think everyone, if they think about times where their libido was really, really high in their life and times where their libido was low, low libido is always correlating with some other health issue. So for me personally, in my pre-med degree, I started to have anxiety and depression issues. And I went from having an amazing libido to I could care less if I ever had sex again. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I'm hearing from patients daily.
Right.
So
yeah,
for me, it's always a link to another health concern.
Right. And as you're saying here a few times, the solution isn't just another pill, isn't just, okay, let's try a different antidepressant and switch you around and swap them in and out after doing a questionnaire with your general practitioner. Let's, you know, by all means, if someone's suicidal, let's, you know, take care of those kind of things, but let's find out what's really going on here and address it. And even I think within the naturopathic functional medicine community, it's not just, okay, well, we found the hormone deficiencies and the nutrient deficiencies, which is great and definitely should be done. But that, as you were saying, isn't always the root cause and definitely isn't the main issue with the lack of connection, because both partners could have enough like B5 and B6 and be sleeping better and have enough hormones. But if, you know, they do try to connect, then, and there's an issue, then maybe couples counseling or something around that to figure out like their love languages, what needs to be done around that to figure out like, okay, what's the root cause here within the relationship. And then, you know, we're talking about safety, and then things come up like trust and respect around that. And I think men typically need to be respected or revered. It's kind of like, you know, stroke their ego kind of thing. And then women, it's more, I need to feel safe. And for some women, they may also need that kind of, okay, stroke my ego and be respected too. I mean, everybody should be respected in their relationships, but there's some more nuance there, I think, with the different genders. With all that said, what are some key tests that you would always look at if a lady came into your office with low libido? And then maybe we can talk about men after that for testing.
Sure. Can I bring it back to ego for 1 second?
Yeah, definitely. Please do.
Okay. So ego is something really interesting because men are damaged by the same system that women are with our sex education. And there's sort of this pervasive belief that men should just know. They should just know how to please a woman and not know, like, they shouldn't have to ask. And if they have to ask, then it somehow makes them less masculine. With dealing with that whole like ego thing, which sets us up because we're taught that penetrative sex is like that sex, because we're basically taught reproductive health. We're not taught about pleasure and how to make sex worth wanting for everyone, including, you know, same-sex couples. We're taught about reproduction, and because reproduction has to do with penis and vagina, that's sort of what we all think sex is. So even from a very early age, we're having sex, like penetrative sex, that is not even that satisfying for the majority of women who don't orgasm from penetration alone. So again, these same women are taught, or it sort of reinforced that there's something wrong with them. Like, oh, why am I not climaxing at the same time as my partner with penetration? And again, we're not having the conversation because that's what we think the norm is. And men don't want to ask and women don't want to hurt the ego. So we are in this huge breakdown where we're having sex that just is not optimal for most women. And in a way, I think that men really do, they want to please their partner, but they don't know how to ask, or they're, because what used to work when the relationship is new is not working anymore, but there's no conversation around that gap. So ego is huge when it comes to why things break down.
Yeah, that's a really valid point. And I think something that probably needs, you know, we could probably talk about for a whole hour, in that kind of walking on eggshells that you're mentioning that women may feel around ego. And I think especially the more successful a male partner is in their career, potentially the harder it is for them, unless they're super open-minded, to kind of be humble in this aspect of their life and say, okay, well, you know, things used to be really good. What's going on? Maybe I need to ask, like, has something changed, or did I miss something? You know, what are the things, you know, usually early in a relationship, if those conversations are being had, that's when they happen, and then they never happen again. So, and then it kind of becomes like, like a recipe, you know? It's like,
yes,
people get in their kind of habits, or, okay, well, last time this worked, so we're just going to keep doing it again and again. And then I think that's where people start to label their sexual relationship as boring, or it's repetitive and kind of dried up, if you will. And then Instagram or Facebook or whatever becomes more exciting than sex, because they're getting automatic dopamine dumps in their brain, you know, just these huge surges of dopamine with every little click or like or comment. And the relationship has to compete with that, not just sex, but the whole relationship, the interactions. It's like, okay, can we put our phones down, everybody, and just have a regular conversation? I actually saw something that was kind of funny this morning, ironically, on Instagram, because it was, I think it was like a marathon runner or something, or some professional athlete posting about when they were a kid. It was a black and white picture of people in a mosh pit and like crowd surfing, and it said something like, "I'm glad that I grew up doing this." And then the bottom picture said, "Not this." It was a meme split picture, and then of a bunch of teenage kids on their cell phones all in a room, not interacting. And, you know, I often see this when I do go to concerts here in Seattle. You're basically watching, if you're in the back row, the concert through a bunch of people's cell phones. And I used to be a pretty big fan of the White Stripes, and Jack White said that he didn't want to tour again. This was years ago, because when he was famous, cell phones weren't really a thing. Like, the smartphone wasn't out in the early 2000s. And, you know, he wasn't playing at concerts where people were taking photographs with their smartphones, because they're like, all we had was like a flip phone, right? And most people didn't even have those for a while. So, you know, now fast forward, we have this kind of idolization of people like Steve Jobs and Jeff Bezos, and these kind of like tech visionary icons in history. And I think we've created this tech central world where now we are becoming more interested in interacting, and we're all guilty of this, with computers, our cell phones and our actual computers, than we are with real people. And what we're talking about here today is the implications of that on sexual health. So it's like, well, if you love your cell phone more than your partner, and your interest and your actions are proving that, then your partner literally is competing with your cell phone addiction over your sex life. And, you know, taking Viagra and taking stimulants, or, you know, I know, like, I'm not in the party scene in Seattle, but I know the party scene in a lot of cities like Toronto, Seattle, LA, New York. Molly, which is like low dose NMDA, is.
I'm here in my living room peering through my mini blinds at a man who's sawing off something under my neighbor's car. Yep, this guy is stealing catalytic converters. And if you report thieves like him, you could get a reward up to $25,000. Just submit a confidential tip at heatreward.com or call 1-800-947-HEAT. That's H-E-A-T. The Virginia State Police HEAT Program. Reported. Rewarded.
Michael J. for Hope for the Warriors. Started back in 06 at Camp Lejeune. Military families witnessing the effects of war on their loved ones. Now, almost 20 years later, they've aided over 53,000 service members, veterans, and families with confidential, high-quality behavioral health care services at little or no cost to post 9/11 vets and their families. Over 91% of every dollar donated goes directly to the programs. If you're as concerned about our heroes as I am, go to hopeforthewarriors.org.
You know, ecstasy, low-dose ecstasy is used a lot in the party scene. And in the 50s, they were actually researching ecstasy and using ecstasy for marriage counseling to help get married couples that were just kind of like, why aren't we having sex anymore? Why aren't we connected? And there weren't cell phone problems and addictions then because right. they weren't there, but they still had these connection problems. So they were using ecstasy to help married couples, in that case, typically mostly heterosexual couples, figure out how to reconnect. So I guess the roundabout there is brain chemistry. You know, we're talking a lot about brain chemistry, and then you're talking about re-education of sexual desire around not just penetration, but, you know, having a different paradigm around that and what that looks like for women or same-sex couples. And then I really liked what you were talking about in the beginning, where it reminded me, actually, I think it was like a calendar when I was in naturopathic medical school. And those who don't know, most medical schools and naturopathic medical schools especially are mostly female. So they were, I think they were doing a fundraiser and selling a calendar when I was in school that it was a joke. And every month was a man like in shorts, like a muscular man in shorts, like doing house chores. And I was like, foreplay for women, you know? And it was a joke, but a lot of my female classmates were like, well, you know, they were married and they were saying, yeah, it's actually not too far from the truth. You know, if he would just do the dishes more or like clean the shower or whatever, do something that I always do so that I can relax more, that could do it for me. So, you know, guys who are listening, hopefully you're taking notes mentally.
Yeah. And so acts of service, which is the doing the chores, that's a big one. Another big one, and I know this for me, quality time and physical touch. So being, if you're on your phone, you're not present. There's no, like, so ways to increase oxytocin and that connection. And that's what we need to compete with the dopamine hits of the technology, to foster that connection in a relationship, especially long-term. So holding hands, having a hug that lasts longer than 20 seconds. So I will come home from a crazy day at my practice and doesn't matter what my husband's doing, I get a bear hug. And we, like, that is my start to come down from sympathetic into parasympathetic and feel safe. And you actually can feel the oxytocin release. So it doesn't matter what I'm doing, what he's doing, we have that connection point. There's no screens, there's no nothing, but we just literally stand in that embrace every single day. And it really makes a difference for me. And another thing, eye contact. So when we're on our phone all the time, we are not making eye contact. And this is something, flirting is one of these tools that we could all use. And I know people will always get up in arms about this one, but I don't care because it works and they should just try it. But making eye contact with another human, and I don't care if this is the person that is cashing you out at the grocery store, just like looking up from your screen on public transit and smiling, giving somebody a compliment, that is going to release oxytocin and again put you in that state to give and receive pleasure. So screen-free times are absolutely key because it allows for the physical touch, the quality time, the flirting. And I mean, I don't know what you think about this, but a lot of times my patients or the women that I work with at the Pleasure Collective will say like, well, is that cheating? You know, if they're smiling, making eye contact, giving someone else a compliment. And I say, I do this with men. I do it with women. I do it with my cat. Like, I literally flirt with everyone because it fills up my cup. So mm-hmm. today, as I was telling you earlier, I finished an amazing yoga class, felt super like relaxed, ready to have an amazing day. And I came back to a note on my car that someone had hit my car in the parking lot. I love my car. I was so disappointed. But that, I let myself feel that for 5 seconds. And then I decided that I was going to flirt and not let it ruin my day and make eye contact with the police officer, flirt with the person on the phone who hit my car, because guess what? What can we do about it now? So
yeah,
why not have a positive interaction out of something that sucked? So what's your opinion on flirting?
Well, I think there's variation of degrees of like flirting, quote unquote flirting. I think, you know, I really like the eye contact and I, you know, getting away from the cell phone and having eye contact with other people. And I don't think that's flirting. Definitely not. I think that's just being present for the people around you and, you know, and smiling to people and, you know, looking them in the eye. One, I think it's polite. And two, I think everybody, myself included, needs to do that more often. I think flirting, like playful, innocent flirting with no intentions behind it, kind of like you're talking about, which is like, it's brief, it's subtle, it's not, there's no like body contact, you know, it's not like one person is like making a move per se on the other person. I mean, if they're single and they're both consensual, that's fine. But I think where flirting like gets into problems is when, it's like, somebody's doing it constantly when maybe they're in a non-monogamous, committed relationship, whether they're married or not. And it's kind of like, okay, well, I was, you know, having this interaction with this person over and over again, with potential intentions for more, whatever that more would be. So I think it's a conversation every couple should have, or every person should kind of like check in with themselves, like, where does that go? I personally don't think there's anything wrong with what you're talking about. And I think most of our interactions today needs to be more of that kind of nature of like that good playful nature where it's kind of like, hey, like, what's up? Like, smile, laugh, make a joke, interact, and have more like joy and confidence in our interactions instead of kind of like this fear of people, you know? And we live in kind of two realities now. We live in this kind of alternate social media reality if you're on social media, and then we live in the real world. And then there's even the acronym, you know, in real world, IRL, which is just hilarious.
Crazy. It's like a
hashtag acronym in the fake world. But I guess my point is if that can just help somebody's mood and then they go home and they have an amazing interaction with their significant other, no harm, no foul in my mind. I don't see any issue with that. I think maybe... I think the devil's advocate of that would be that if somebody is having repetitive flirtatious interactions with one person and that other person thinks there's something more going on there, and then it kind of like feeds into a bigger problem that maybe is in a place that they are visiting or at like their work every day. Then that could be an issue potentially for them in their workspace later on. But yeah, I don't think there's any issue with smiling, complimenting your cashier, saying, hey, you know, I really like, I like your hair, or like cool glasses, you know, cracking a joke, smiling. I don't see anything wrong with that. And everybody today, it seems like everybody today is anxious and depressed and touch deprived. So, you know, if you're single, go get a massage once a week, or, you know, hug your friends longer. And even with men, actually, if you go back in time in the US, men used to be a little bit more, and I'm talking about heterosexual male friends who now it's like this, I don't know what it is, like the homophobia or something or what. And, you know, male friends, whether they're gay or heterosexual or whatever, used to be a little bit more touchy-feely than we are now. And in other cultures, some of the most masculine cultures, men hug more. They're more kind of like having more non-sexual touch, if you will, that's like platonic. So there are some like black and white photos that I've seen that you could probably Google or whatever that have men like literally holding hands and sitting next to each other as friends. And
yeah,
there's research that shows like holding hands decreases anxiety. So I think that the amount of fear out there and kind of like this false machoism, and I think there's, you know, there's a lot of kind of banter about toxic masculinity in the media. And I think it's actually been harmful to masculinity, which is non-toxic, which is like, I'm a healthy man. I speak my mind. I'm confident. You know, I'm okay with being a provider for my significant other. Well, you know, I live in Seattle and there's a large gay population here and a male gay population and female and all that. So, you know, whether one of them is the provider in a male homosexual relationship, it's like, doesn't matter. There is healthy masculinity. And I think the masculinity has been demonized altogether. It's like we've thrown the baby out with the bathwater and just said, well, there's this toxic masculinity because we have like some really crappy leaders in the world that happen to be men. So there's also been many other leaders throughout history that were far worse, and that some of them were women and some of them were men. You know, if you drink Bloody Mary, that's named after a pretty murderous, horrible woman who was Queen of England. So I think the demonization of toxic masculinity has kind of like hit a threshold that for me and a lot of the men in that I speak to, it's made, I think, men shy away from smiling and interacting with women more. You know, if we're talking about like this kind of like friendly, flirtatious, hey, how you doing? Like, yeah, ladies, not every guy who does that wants to sleep with you. And they may, but it doesn't mean they do. So I think that there needs to be a reprogramming of like, okay, it's okay for us to smile and interact with each other and have these conversations,
right?
And then go on with our day. Like nothing really big happened. It's just like, hey, like I'm going to smile at like the guy I buy a newspaper from at the grocery store, or because we are lacking in these real interactions. And especially if somebody is working themselves literally half to death, they're not having a lot of positive inputs into their mental awareness every day that can play into like, hey, like I actually like people, you know? And if, you know, there's like systems in the brain and neurologically in the eye that pick up, is this person safe? Is this scene safe? And I think that there's been enough major traumas in both men and women's lives, whether it's work related or, you know, sexual traumas or what have you, that have put a big enough wall between people that we don't feel safe around people. And then there's the whole issue of like feeling safe with your partner. So the more that our brains can register people as safe, that actually are safe, the better I think that we can feel safe and warm and kind of like have those dopamine excitements with our significant other, because it's kind of like, hey, all of these people are safe. This person's safe. I'm okay. It's okay. Everything's going to be okay. And we don't have those scripts running in our brain. We have more of these fear-based scripts running. How am I going to do this? How am I going to make ends meet? Or how am I going to deal with all this stuff that's happening? Or, you know, how am I going to take care of my kids and make sure that they can afford college in the US or whatever? So like, these are the things that everyone's kind of like freaking out about, or like, oh, my company just went public and how am I going to manage the extra demands that are on me now? And I'm not getting a pay raise, but I'm doing five people's jobs and they just like axed half the people in my department and are cutting funding, blah, blah, blah. So like, these are the things that people are thinking about, not, oh, do I feel safe in my relationship and how to rewire that kind of reptilian brain, the limbic system, and get out of that fight or flight. Kind of went on a long banter there, but
you know. You brought up a really good point about men and like toxic masculinity, and can you even feel safe? But it goes back to the, we need a better sexual health education system, because what I talk about with the clients in the Pleasure Collective is like masculinity as more yang and femininity as more yin. And they both need to exist together in using yin and yang as that paradigm for kind of how to re-educate people. Because there are times for like doing and there are times for being and receiving, which is more like more yin, more feminine. And it, we need that balance together so that we can have a new construct for what we would call masculinity and femininity. And also kind of what you were bringing up reminded me about that conversation of consent and intention. So if we can, because also we're taught in society that women are sort of, men are supposed to be the pursuers and women are supposed to be the, oh no, like I don't, I don't want to have sex. But really they do. So when no doesn't mean no, we're also disrupting consent altogether, where we need to be teaching people that consent's verbal, consent's ongoing. So, you know, maybe yes, you compliment somebody about their glasses at the grocery store, and for whatever reason, where they're at in their life, that doesn't land and they're put off by it. That's okay. Like, you know, we can move right on from that situation. But again, it comes from educating people from the very, very beginning that like yes has to mean yes and no needs to mean no. And this whole script of men being the pursuers and women being hard to get is like literally disrupting that. And also we don't even, there's an entire communication module for the women that I work with of like a yes, no, maybe column. And we spend an hour talking about things that they definitely would do, like in the bedroom, out of the bedroom, sexual activities, things that they maybe, if the circumstances were right, would consider doing, and things that are hard no's for them. But those things can evolve over time, mm-hmm, if we have a conversation about consent. And it's, yeah, there.
I like what you're talking about. And I think that's, you know, for women listening, maybe we should reiterate what the Pleasure Collective is, a coaching community and sexual health and wellness re-education program specifically for women, correct?
Yes. So the Pleasure Collective is a 12-week coaching program for women. After we've worked with the women, sometimes we will, if we feel the need or feel like it's necessary, the right fit, work with the couple. but we are always starting with the women just because we feel like with society and pornography and how we're taught about sex, there's so much to like unpack and re-educate there. So we're having really, really amazing results dealing with the belief systems and communication tools and where women really feel comfortable in their sexuality. They know how to ask for it. They know how to receive pleasure and not perform during sex anymore. So it really does become an enjoyable experience for them. And when that happens, they want more of it. So their husbands and partners are very grateful after the 12 weeks. And so are they. Just like they're more in touch with themselves. We're saving relationships.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I love that. That's amazing. And it sounds like from what you already shared about it, that it could benefit women while they're doing the program. So it's not like the couple has to wait 12 weeks to reap full benefit or partial benefit. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Even from week one, it's literally about belief systems. And if we're on Skype, because we're dealing with women all over the world at this point, I can just, once women realize like, oh, I'm normal. It's what I've been taught. And I don't have to be like the women that I see in pornography to have good sex and have sex that my husband wants to have too. Just after week one, when you see the relief come over them and sort of like their shoulders relax, it's like, okay, this is going to be awesome. So just by them feeling normal and knowing that they're normal, knowing that their vulvas are normal, it's from yeah. week one, there's progress. It's amazing.
That's great. Yeah. And you brought up pornography, and I just want to say for both men and women that there's nothing normal or quote unquote healthy about the sex in pornography. And it's definitely the audience they're geared towards is mostly men. And then I think for men and women, just realize that it's acting. One, it's acting, it's bad acting, but
yes.
And two, the men are using many medications.
Michael J. for Hope for the Warriors. Started back in 06 at Camp Lejeune. Military families witnessing the effects of war on their loved ones. Now, almost 20 years later, they've aided over 53,000 service members, veterans, and families with confidential, high-quality behavioral health care services at little or no cost. To post 9/11 vets and their families, over 91% of every dollar donated goes directly to the program. If you're as concerned about our heroes as I am, go to hopeforthewarriors.org. Michael J. for Hope for the Warriors. Started back in 06 at Camp Lejeune. Military families witnessing the effects of war on their loved ones. Now, almost 20 years later, they've aided over 53,000 service members, veterans, and families with confidential, high-quality behavioral health care services at little or no cost. To post 9/11 vets and their families, over 91% of every dollar donated goes directly to the programs. If you're as concerned about our heroes as I am, go to hopeforthewarriors.org.
Medications to maintain and achieve an erection so that they can film for hours. So keep those things in mind. Also, you know, there are certain things that certain people like and don't like. So pornography is also creating a lot of sexual dysfunctions for men. Inability to achieve an erection or be aroused by their partner, even though they're attracted to them physically still. Premature ejaculation because they're masturbating while watching porn. Dopamine depletion. So you're talking about like depression and anhedonia. So it's doing all those things. You're basically rewiring the nervous system when men are doing that to not last as long in bed with their significant other, which can create other sexual issues. So I've had male patients over the years where they're watching a lot of porn, and they literally couldn't get or maintain an erection because of their porn abuse. So it's a huge problem. But when it comes, I think it's important for both men and women to realize that that, you know, it's a movie, you know, it's not real, and it's usually not what men, it's usually not what women desire, what you're seeing in porn.
Yeah, it's extreme.
If it's heterosexual porn. So yeah, it's extreme on all accounts. And I, the other thing that really disturbs me about porn is that the potential that some of the female participants could be, I guess, trafficked or slave labor, basically. So just, you don't know what you're consuming out there. And I really question something when it's free. So they, you know, there's the websites that are free. So, you know, everything in moderation, including moderation. And if you're consuming porn on the regular, just be mindful of those things. And if your significant other is, be mindful of those things and how they could be impacting your arousal state or sexual health and you know, dopamine and brain health. So it can definitely alter things.
For sure. And we're using porn as default sexual health education, especially for millennials and younger who have been raised with access to porn on their devices at all times. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if we don't feel comfortable asking, if our sex education in school includes like putting a condom on a banana and writing questions down to pass to the teacher, people are turning to porn as sex education. And I cannot remember who said this quote, but learning to have sex by watching porn is like learning to drive by watching The Fast and the Furious. So
well said. That's not the kind of driving or sex that you're going to want to be doing.
That's the thing is, and for some people, maybe it is, but as far as women, we know that arousal comes from being in the parasympathetic nervous state and being, you know, choked and spanked and all of those things is not necessarily conducive for that, but it might be for some women. And as long as there is consent, that's all good. One of my favorite resources is Make Love Not Porn, Cindy Gallup, amazing businesswoman, and it is a site with adults in real relationships. It's called like real world sex. So people like actually consenting, not being trafficked,
good.
Just couples being intimate and choosing to share that. So that is a good alternative resource from your other pornography Excellent. Sites.
That's good to know about. And what was that called again for the listeners?
Make Love Not Porn.
Make Love Not Porn. Okay. Great.
MLNP.com, I think.
Okay. Excellent. There was a topic that I wanted to kind of get into around libidos, mismatched libidos, and monogamy potentially being the problem or part of the problem for maybe some couples, and how that all can be kind of like hashed out or intertwined.
For sure. So mismatched libidos are a huge problem in the patient population that I deal with. The person with a higher libido feels resentful, maybe even hurt that their wanting isn't reciprocated from their partner, and the partner with a lower libido feels like a failure, like they're letting their partner down or like there's something wrong with them. And then again, without the correct communication around it, we're just driving a bigger wedge between these relationships. So a lot of people will ask me if I think that monogamy is the issue. While I think that the way we're doing monogamy is probably not the best, because we know that the marriage failure rate is over half. And I don't know about you, but if I was going to go into a business venture or an investment and somebody told me that it had like a 50% chance of failing, I probably would not choose to do it. But yet we choose to do marriage and monogamy all the time.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's two schools of thought on this, and teach about this in the Pleasure Collective and talk about it at length in my book. And the two schools of thought are Esther Perel is an amazing sort of like sex researcher. And she talks about that we need some distance in a relationship, like to make monogamy work long term. So mm-hmm. where we can witness our partner doing something that they're great at, and like we can see them in their pleasure, but we're sort of separate. And she has a great TED talk. The name is escaping me, but she also wrote State of Affairs and Mating in Captivity, both great books about monogamy and society and sort of where we're at. But so her theory is space, that if we become so intertwined, and I'm obviously summarizing, but so intertwined that we don't have anything of our own and sort of a relationship swallows us whole, that can make it fail.
Mm-hmm.
So we always want to be doing things for ourselves, and we see for ourselves that make us happy and joyful. And we see women running businesses, women like working really hard in the tech industry or running their own business, whatever, their needs are getting put to the bottom of the to-do list, if at all. So they're never really achieving that state. So that's where the work is for some people. And then the second school of thought, John Gottman is the researcher on that. And his theory is that if we want monogamy to work, it's like we need to build a bridge together and do things together to keep advancing the plot and advancing that connection.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always talking with women or couples about which of those schools of thought work for them. And sometimes I find it's a combination
right.
for people, where having common interests and doing things together with a mix of that separation and that allure, because it's that newness that gives the dopamine, like we were talking about, that new relationship energy. So when you've been with somebody for a number of months or years and things are just, you know, oxytocin and connection, which is great, but it's still not that excitement. So both partners need to cultivate that newness, be on their growing edge to an extent where they can bring that energy back to the relationship. So I don't necessarily think monogamy is the problem, but again, we need to be taught how, if we choose monogamy, how are we going to do it in a way that's going to work and not, you know, suffocate each other or make us resentful of each other when we don't want sex at the same time all the time.
Yeah, I like that. I like John Gottman's work, and he's here in Seattle with his Love Lab, and he has a lot of great books out there, from everything from like having a new child to marriage counseling and marriage support. And there's actually, he does biannual weekend workshops for couples in the, I believe it's in the Seattle area that he does it here. And you can go through the whole weekend. It's like an intensive as a couple. And a lot of people, a lot of testimonials report that it's saved marriages or improved marriages. So something for people to check out. And then Esther Perel came when she wrote her second book about people having experiences of infidelity. She came to Seattle and did a kind of like a Q&A with Dan Savage. So I actually went to that.
Dan Savage. Oh, yeah. You did? That's amazing. Yeah.
So it was Dan Savage and Esther Perel on stage, and there was, they were just had a discussion, and then they had a Q&A session, and then I got Esther Perel to sign her new book for me and then gifted it to somebody. But yeah, her work is great. I believe she has like a podcast. I think you pay for episodes, but I've listened to both her books on Audible and both of them are book great. I think for what we're talking about today, Mating in Captivity is a must read or must listen to. But yeah, the monogamy thing, there's definitely big movements in major cities for non-monogamy
or polyamory.
And I think there's a certain type of person and personality who that works for, and they call it compersion, where they feel, instead of jealousy, they may still feel jealousy, but they actually feel content or joy or happy when their partner is experiencing joy. So when their partner says, comes back and says, yeah, I had a great time with person, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we had sex and whatever. They don't feel like strangling them. Instead, they feel like this joy inside. And, you know, it's all consensual. And supposedly there's rules or some guidelines or whatnot to that they follow. However, I think there's definitely people that doesn't work for, and it's like anything, you know, you got to know yourself. Like if you don't want to go on a roller coaster ride at Six Flags and your whole family's there, and you know that every time you go on that roller coaster ride, you have a headache and throw up afterwards, don't do it. So, it's, you just got to know yourself is what I'm getting to. And you know, the low libido mismatch is ubiquitous. You know, I actually was interviewed on a local sex therapist podcast here in Seattle. And I asked her either before or after the podcast recording. And she said, it's ubiquitous. Like most, every couple. And of course, she's a sex therapist. So she's working with people who want to, you know, improve this. But everybody she's met, and she's been practicing for a while, I believe, is reporting this. So just because it's common doesn't mean that's normal, but there's, as we mentioned, like real reasons, modern reasons, technological reasons, brain chemistry reasons, hormone reasons, why people need to pay attention to these things. And, you know, it could be a bigger issue. You know, it could be a much bigger problem than just a hormone imbalance, or you know, it could be brain chemistry issues that are playing into their lack of focus at work. You know, if somebody is struggling with symptoms of like ADD, lack of focus, low libido, you know, maybe they've had several concussions and they're on their way to CTE and their brain needs a lot of support. And it's not just about sex, you know. So all symptoms, as we're talking about this, listeners should keep in mind, are red flags. So if someone has low libido, maybe look at what are some of the underlying issues, or, you know, was there a car accident in the last 3 years or more or ever? Were there multiple head injuries playing sports growing up, et cetera? So things to look into. There are a couple other things that we wanted to share with the audience around testing and whatnot. Is there any lab tests that you, or several lab tests that you recommend that all patients get before they rule out, you know, say they, I don't need any hormone therapies?
So for women, estrogen, progesterone, free and total, testosterone, sometimes DHEA is usually where I would start. For men, free and total testosterone, DHEA, maybe estradiol, sort of depending on the picture, but that would be my baseline starting point. And then if those come back okay, then we're looking at, you know, adrenals and cortisol or digging further in. But usually if those hormones are okay, or we've replaced those hormones and blood work comes back within a functional normal range, then I'm always looking at the like belief systems, the communication, all of the more mental, emotional causes of low libido.
Excellent. Yeah, it's really good to have that approach. I've found that a lot of times, as you're, you know, mentioning this, I'm thinking of patients and there's major kind of like elephant in the room relationship issues between the couples. You know, like there could have been infidelity. You know, we're talking about Esther Perel. There could have been traumas in work that are, you know, or issues with addiction, whether it's alcohol or whatnot. Or trust, you know, trust had been breached. Maybe it wasn't full infidelity, but, you know, maybe there was something else in the trust area that was kind of shattered and hasn't been fully repaired or can't be fully repaired. So, you know, those are things that they could do your pleasure collective and maybe work with a therapist who is qualified if they feel comfortable with that. Are there any other resources that you would like to share with audience? You have your book, The Pink Canary, The Hidden Secret to Optimal Health for Women, coming out in January 2020. So we're in November right now, 2019. So that's exciting.
Really exciting. Can't wait to get some of these topics out for people to read about in detail, because it is such a concern affecting so many individuals and couples. I would say probably the best thing to do would be to follow my Instagram. My handle's at Dr. Jordan Wiggins. And that way, all of my quizzes that I post, any resources, when the book is available for pre-sale, we will all let you know there. And the website, thepleasurecollective.com. If you sign up for that mailing list, a lot of the handouts, the resources that I'm giving my patients come out in a weekly newsletter. So there's actually things there that you can like print and work on at home, whether it's around like beliefs or how to start these conversations with your partner. So there's a ton of free resources on that mailing list.
Spectacular. Yeah, everybody take advantage of that. Free resources you should never pass up. And then, you know, sign up for the Pleasure Collective if anything we've talked about resonates with you. And if you're male and your significant other is somebody that could benefit from this, sign up for it as well. And I just want to thank you for your time and everything you're sharing with everybody. And I'm excited for your book to come out. I'm definitely going to share it with female patients. And I look forward to seeing what happens for you in the next year. It'll be exciting with the book release.
Thank you so much for having me and for the candid conversation. I can't wait for the book to come out either.
It'll be great. All right, everybody, take care and please share the podcast with friends or family, and we'll see you next time.
Now, here's for my mandatory disclaimer. This is a medical information podcast and is only for general information purposes. It does not substitute or constitute the practice of medicine or any medical practices, including the giving of medical advice to any individual. And please observe that no doctor-patient relationship has been formed here. This medical podcast offers health, hormone, fitness, and nutrition information and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitution for, nor does it replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health, you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional. Do not disregard, avoid, or delay obtaining medical or health-related advice and appropriate treatment from your healthcare professional. Users should seek the care of their physician or healthcare professional for any such conditions. The use of any information provided on this podcast is solely at your own risk. The contents and topics of this podcast have not been evaluated by the FDA nor approved by any other government or official body. The topics and content covered is not intended to diagnose, cure, or prevent any disease or disorder of any kind. Developments in medical research may impact the health, fitness, and nutritional advice that appears here on the podcast in the future episodes. No assurance can be given that the advice contained in this podcast will always include the most recent findings or developments in medicine with respect to the particular material covered. If you are in the United States and think you are having a medical or health emergency, call your healthcare professional or 911 immediately. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to hearing your feedback and looking forward to have you on future podcasts. Thank you.